The Fan on Demand. From the skills of killer Canadian Milos Raonic to the spacesuit outfits of Serena Williams, this is Total Tennis Coverage. This is Aces on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Good Thursday evening, everybody. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit is here, and it's time for Aces, Canada's only tennis radio program. Delighted to be with Tom Tebbit, veteran tennis reporter who just got back from Wimbledon. And Mr. Tebbit, how was it this time around?
It was good. There were some very interesting things that happened, and obviously the boys and the girls, which almost never happens, and there it happened. Two Canadians, so that was pretty terrific.
Sensational story on the local angle. We'll be talking about that all night. We have our mystery sound voice later in the program. You get to win Rogers Cup tickets for Monday night, so listen in for that. You can email roger at sportsnet590.ca. Follow me on Twitter at theroj590. Drop an email or a tweet. Questions for Tom. We'll have that in our mailbag and your chance to win the tickets after the sounder. And Roger Federer, quickly before we get to the two Canadians, what do you say? 17 titles. We talked about the over-under last show and how many majors are going to be. I said maybe he's never going to win another one. I guess, like a lot of people, maybe I just didn't give him the credit. What an athlete.
Well, terrific guy. I think I said 1.5. So if he wins another one, I lose. So right now I'm still there. But no, it was a terrific performance. He does have a way with Andy Murray, though. I mean, I think if it had been Nadal or Djokovic at the very best, could have been tricky. But I mean, those third and fourth sets, he just was flowing like a... just like a gazelle. It was really beautiful to watch.
Great player indeed. This segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada. Check out Rogers Cup in Toronto, August 4th to 12th. For tickets, visit rogerscup.com. Or better still, listen in, because later in the show we'll have some. Okay, Philip Pelliwoe. Introduce him and tell us about him.
Well, he was the runner-up at the Australian Open Juniors. Heartbreak there. Runner-up at the French Open Juniors. Heartbreak there. And he came through, say, 5 match points in the semifinals. So it was terrific. So 18 years old from Vancouver, the guy was just absolutely thrilled to death to win the Wimbledon Boys Championship.
Tom, in conversation with Philip Pelliwoe.
Philip Pelliwoe, welcome to Aces.
Great to be here, Tom.
How unbelievable has all this been? 6 months, you play in the final of the Australian Open Juniors in Rod Laver Arena, then you play in the final of the French Open, and then you play in number one court at Wimbledon, and you win the Wimbledon Championship. Over the last 6 months, I mean, 6 months ago, if we'd asked you about this, would you have sort of shook your head and said it's not going to happen?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had no expectations to do this well, and obviously I knew it was possible if I managed to play some of my best tennis on a really, really consistent basis, but you can't really go into a year to expect these kind of results. So I'm very pleasantly surprised so far.
The result of obviously winning Wimbledon was getting to number one in the junior rankings. How satisfying and how important is that to you?
To me, that and winning a Grand Slam title, especially at Wimbledon, was the most important part of the year for me, I think, and of my career so far. It's a great achievement, and honestly, I couldn't be happier at this moment.
As a result of winning the Wimbledon Juniors, you get to go to the Wimbledon Ball. That was on Sunday night after the men's final. How was the food there?
The food was actually really good. Smaller portions, but just unbelievable taste.
Really? And yeah. Could you indulge yourself with a glass of wine or a glass of champagne?
I had a glass of wine, but that was about it. I don't really drink, so I just had to... everyone else was having some, so they said that I should have some as well and to kind of be in the atmosphere, but I don't really like to drink, so.
And were there any pretty women there?
It's mostly older couples, and but I didn't really get to see too many people aside from the people at my table.
You got your picture taken with Roger Federer. Did you get a chance to talk to him at all?
Yeah, I got about a 5 minutes conversation with him. We just talked about general stuff, how my year went so far, what my plans for the future are, and just he kind of told me what he had done at my age, and it was nice. He really took the time to at least seem interested in what was going on with me, and I really appreciated that.
Did you have any questions for him?
Probably did. I can't remember too well. I was just kind of overwhelmed by the fact that I'm talking to Roger Federer, but I asked him about his twins, and he seemed really, really interested in talking about that. So,
I know one thing you didn't talk to him about, because I heard you say during the final that you were kind of hoping Murray would win because he's had a he's had a mental block about, you know, winning Grand Slams. Obviously, that didn't happen, but I guess it, in some ways it is too bad that Murray didn't make it. I was kind of cheering for him as well, just because of all the pressure and all the long time he's been trying to do this, and it would really be great if he could finally get over the hump.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously didn't talk about my preference at the time, but to be honest, I'm happy that Federer achieved that, and I congratulated him, and he was really happy about it, talked about how it felt for him, and we had a good conversation about that as well. So I didn't really go into anything offensive with saying that I preferred Murray to win, obviously. So
well, I think
it was good.
I think you're a pretty tactful guy, so you wouldn't get in trouble with yourself that way. Yeah. You're very intense on the court, and but being that intense, can you have fun while you're actually out there playing, or is the fun come afterwards, appreciating what you've gone through?
Actually, I really, really enjoyed playing on center court, or rather on court one. I try to have fun when I'm on court, and despite being that intense, but I try to bring out a smile every once in a while and just take in the experience, because sometimes you get really into the match and you don't really pay attention to the fact that you're in that situation. You're too focused on the result itself. And I just took a little bit of time to take in my surroundings and just enjoy it. It was amazing.
What do you think the biggest adjustment you'll have to make as you go from the juniors into the pros?
Well, I would say the fact that the speed is so different, the guys are so much stronger at the pros, is going to be a big adjustment I'm going to have to make. I'm going to have to work on my fitness and all that. I think so far I've done a really good job at that, but to be at the highest level with guys in the top 100, it's going to be a big difference, because that's where the level really changes, is around top 100. So it's just going to be a lot of work to do, playing a lot of tournaments at that level and trying to adjust to everything that is different from the juniors. So
You're ranked 573 now, I think, in the ATP rankings. Do you have any idea what you'd like to be by the end of the year?
Yeah, actually, the goal at the beginning of the year was to be 500 by the end of 2012, I believe. But now that I'm pretty close to that, I think that I can do a lot better. And I'm hoping to get, I don't know, this is kind of a shot out in the air. I would say probably top 300 is my goal by the end of the year.
I think you got a good shot at that. In your development, is there any one person who stands out as being the most important to you?
I don't think I can really pick out one person, because a lot of people deserve credit for what's gone on in my career so far. I mean, my family's been there, all the friends and everyone that was helping me out in Vancouver, obviously Tennis Canada, all the coaches, everyone, all the staff, marketing team, the public relations. There's so many people behind the success, and of not only me, but Canadian tennis in general, that I can't really pick out one and leave out everyone else. So
There's a lot of good juniors these days, and I'm sure you played a number of them, but I was just wondering, if you take yourself out of the equation, who do you think is the best junior player who has the most promising future besides yourself?
It's tough to say. I would say Kimmer Kaupians is really good. He's really improved his game recently, and honestly, I thought that he was the one, if not Luke Saville, to win Wimbledon. I didn't really expect to do it myself, so I was choosing him or Saville to win. I think Luke Saville as well has a great game, and that he's going to do well. There's quite a few other players, but it's tough to say now, because this is about the time when everyone, you see when everyone either drops off or starts to do well, but some people end up being late bloomers, so it's a bit difficult to say besides those two right now. So,
did you ever have a pinch-me moment at Wimbledon, even maybe last year or even before, obviously you won the final this year, a moment you're just sort of standing there thinking, gee, am I really here?
Yeah, I would say after I won the semifinal, and I think that was really the biggest one for me, because I ended up saving 5 match points there, coming back from 5-2, and I could have easily been out in the semis there. Obviously, after I did win the final, that was the biggest one. I was just sitting on the bench and saying, I can't believe it, I can't believe it. I just won. Did I just win? Oh, my God, I just won. I can't believe it. So that was kind of a moment of disbelief as well. So
Last year, you lost in the first round of Wimbledon to Mathias Bourque from France. And looking back now, how did that sort of help you in having the success that you had this year?
Well, it definitely showed me what I have to work on the grass to get ready. Yeah, that was a big match for me to see what I did wrong, and I took a lot of lessons from that. I think that I did well in preparing for Wimbledon from a big part because of losing that match.
Could you have been as good at any other sport as you are at tennis?
That's tough to say. I was a pretty active kid growing up, and I was playing soccer until 13, I believe. But if I had to choose one sport, it would probably be soccer, because I was playing that and at a similar level to tennis until about 12 years old. And then at 13, I started dropping off a little bit, but because of I had to put more time into tennis. But I would probably say soccer, yeah.
I'm sure you followed a lot of tennis matches, either mostly on TV, but sometimes in person. I'm just wondering, over your life so far, what would be the one match that gave you the most enjoyment to watch?
I'm not sure, actually. That's a tough one. I would probably say the match that Nadal beat Federer in the final of Wimbledon when he got that title for the first time. So, yeah, I would say that one.
Just because it was so dramatic with a couple of rain delays and finished 9-7 in the fifth and it was really up and down?
Yeah, that and the fact that Federer hadn't lost in Wimbledon for such a long time, and Nadal was the definition of a clay quarter winning Wimbledon as well. So it was just so much history going down there. So,
Do you realize there's no picture of you on the ATP website when you go to Philip Peliwo? It just has a faceless head.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I know.
Well,
I don't mind. It's okay.
Well, I know a few people at the ATP, so I'm going to do what I can the next couple of days and see if we can get an actual picture of you on there.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Anyway, it's been great having you on the show tonight, Philip, and good luck in the next couple of months, and hopefully we'll see you here in Toronto for the Rogers Cup.
It's great to be on the show, and thanks for having me.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
And congratulations again to Philip Peliwo. Great accomplishment. And, boy, you know, Tom Tebbit's got a lot of influence, obviously, because he's showing me the ATP Tour tennis site. And Philip finally has a beautiful mugshot, courtesy of you. Wow.
Well, I mean, it just seemed to...
Your clout is amazing.
The guy won the Wimbledon Boys Championship. I mean, he deserves to have his picture there. So within 24 hours, they managed to get a picture of him. I'd like to say something, Rog, about the interview. Is that, you know, when you talked about talking to Roger Federer, how many 18-year-old guys would start asking questions about Federer's kids?
Yeah.
You know, it just sort of shows a
decency
in the kid. He's a very nice guy, and he just works his heart out. I really hope he can do well in the pros, because he'll give 100% every single time out there.
Well, great confidence boost to win. And then, of course, a female winner as well. What a week for Canadian tennis.
Yeah, we have Eugenie Bouchard coming up next. And, I mean, she might have had chances before this to do it, actually, but she got sick in the semifinal in Australia. But she's 5'10". You know, she has a good height for a lot of the women players these days, and she's also a very good, very determined player on the court, good competitor.
Eugenie Bouchard and Tom Tebbit coming up next, and later in the program, your chance to win Rogers Cup tickets. We'll have the mystery sounder, and do you have a question for Tom tonight? And I mean, any question on tennis for Tom is welcome. Email roger at sportsnet590.ca, or you can do it on Twitter, at theroj590. Anything about tennis you'd like. I got a fast question for you. What do these two victories mean by these Canadian players to get tennis in this country? Or is this a case they're going to have to follow it up on the pro level for it to mean anything?
Well, no, they're going to have to follow it up. We know that. But, I mean, no, people work hard to develop these players. And the epitome for a junior is to win a junior Grand Slam. And the epitome of the junior Grand Slams is Wimbledon. So you can't get much better than that.
Fantastic for both of them. Eugenie Bouchard, another Wimbledon champion, is next. You're listening to Aces with Tom Tebbit and Roger Lajoie on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Tennis, anyone?
This is Milos Raonic, and you're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Atta boy, Milos. We're still with you, pal. And he got to be endorses the show we like. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit. This is Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eugenie Bouchard coming up in a couple of minutes. Delighted to let you know, because the feedback to the show has been so great. Our regular listeners is Tom and I always talk with you about. We appreciate it so much because it's feedback is great. We've already got a pile of questions for tonight's mailbag. And we're going to be with you the next five Thursdays, so four more consecutively, leading right in, of course, to the Rogers Cup coming up. So, Tom, that'll be fantastic.
Yeah, just one thing I should mention about Philip. He played in a tournament in Saskatoon this week, and he lost in the first round yesterday, Wednesday. Actually, was the day that I talked to him. And the poor guy, you know, he goes to the Wimbledon ball Sunday night. He flies out of London on Monday morning, flies to Halifax, flies from Halifax to Ottawa, flies from Ottawa to Saskatoon, has 2 days. And I mean, you know, give me a break. I mean, who's going to be able to stand under feet and play? So, you know, give him credit for at least showing up. But I think it would have been nice maybe he just took the week off and, you know, basked in the glory sort of thing.
Good for him for wanting to play, but that's one thing for us. Let's get into this interview with Eugenie Bouchard. When we come back, we'll tee up the mailbag and we'll have our mystery sounder coming up as well. Canada struck not once, but twice with Wimbledon Junior Championships. Here's Tom's conversation with Eugenie Bouchard.
Eugenie Bouchard, welcome to Aces.
Thank you.
I know it's the second year in a row you've been to the Wimbledon ball because you won the doubles there last year with Grace Min of the United States, but was it more fun this year?
Well, this year, Sylvie and I got a picture with Roger Federer, so I think that made my night, so I think it was better this year.
Yeah. And I talked to Philip and asked him a few questions about the ball. I asked him how was the food.
It was really good, actually, and it was multiple courses, you know, and it was all super fancy and nice. And those things are fun to go to, you know. It's a nice change up out of our tennis clothes.
And I also asked him, did he have any wine or any champagne? How about you?
I had a glass of champagne. Yeah, had to celebrate.
And obviously you got your picture taken with Roger. Philip talked a little bit about that as well. But did you get a chance to talk to Serena as well?
No, we wanted to get a. I wanted to get a picture with Serena as well with my doubles partner, Taylor Townsend, who's American, who knows her agent. But by the time we were searching for her, she had already left. So I think Roger was a gentleman, you know, really, really nice of him to stay. He stayed a while and took pictures with everyone.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You lost in the semifinals of the Australian Open this year when you were sick, and I remember you walking back to the locker room with your coach at the time, Yves Boulay, and that was obviously a pretty discouraging moment. Did that disappointment in any way help motivate you for the French Open and then obviously finally for Wimbledon where you won the title?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a disappointing moment. A bit unlucky that I was sick in that match, but I mean, I felt like I was close, and I can always go. I could, you know, I had been to the semis the year before as well, so two times in a row I was in the semis, and I felt like, you know, I knew I could get to the finals and win one. So for sure, it's motivating. But you know, I've been working hard all year, so I'm glad to have won Wimbledon.
You won six matches to win Wimbledon, the Wimbledon Junior title this year, and the first three rounds seemed, you know, pretty convincing, nothing too eventful. And then in the first set of the quarters, you lost the set to Antonia Lautner, but came back 6-love, 6-2. So that didn't seem too tough. But the semifinal against Annette Kontaveit was like 7-6, 6-4, and final was 6-2, 6-2. Would you say the semifinal against Kontaveit was your toughest match?
I think so. Even though I didn't lose the set, I think it definitely was the toughest one. She plays pretty aggressive, and that works well on the grass, and so do I. So we both kind of had the same game plan, you know, just going at each other like that. And I think that was my toughest match. Yeah.
What do you like most about playing on the grass?
I like how it pays off if you play aggressive, you know, with your serve, even on the return, you know, first strike tennis, getting the advantage of the point right away. And that's how I like to play. So that's so the grass helps with that, and that's what I like most.
Is the grass sort of the polar opposite of clay?
In a way, yeah. It's definitely not one where it's harder to get back into the point. You know, if you're on the defense, clay can always kind of grind your way back into the point. And grass, I find, you know, anything can kind of happen. You can, if you really go for it, you know, it can all go your way. Or it could not as well, and it's tougher to get back into it. So it was important for me for the whole week to really focus on getting my, you know, doing my serves because that's my strength, you know, really being aggressive on my serve and on my shots as well on the returns right away, and it proved to be pretty good for me.
You had Natalie Tozzi at the 1998 Wimbledon runner-up as your coach during Wimbledon. Did she tell you any good stories about her success on grass and some of the stories about her time at Wimbledon?
Yeah, I've been working since last year at Wimbledon, not all the time, but she's with me at some tournaments, and I'm training with her as well sometimes. And she always, you know, has some stories about when she used to play, and I definitely think being with her at Wimbledon is a plus because that's where she did the best. And she always, you know, we work on really moving forward, she obviously liked to go to the net a lot, so I'm trying to incorporate that into my game a little bit, and I think I did well. I just rewatched the final. I got it on DVD, so I just rewatched it yesterday, and I went up to the net a few times, so I was happy with that.
She's, I think, in her 40s now. Do you ever get a chance to hit with her, and can you see some of the skills that she used to have?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I hit with her at Wimbledon. I was warming up with her before my matches every day, and you know, when we practice, I hit with her a lot, so she still hits really well, and at the net, you know, when she's at the net and I'm at the back, she tells me, she's like, I'm not going to miss, so this is going to be tough training, and that's true. She definitely still has, you know, she still plays well and obviously a very talented player.
Is there one person you would credit above everyone else for the success you've had in tennis?
My mom. Definitely without my parents and my mom, you know, doing what she did for so long. I've been playing since I was 5 years old. I mean, she definitely deserves so much credit, you know, from training to going to tournaments with me to finding the right coach. She's always been there for me. She's always supported me no matter what, so definitely her.
I think over your young career, you've had a few injuries. I think a shin problem, ankles, I think maybe a couple of others. How did you get over those, and how were you able to overcome them?
I think I'm more fit now. I had a few ankle sprains, and the shins were a bit tough last year, but this year I'm feeling great. I think I'm stronger. My muscles are stronger, and I feel great on court. I feel like I can, you know, last a long time, and I don't really ever feel that physically tired. So I think, fingers crossed, but I've been healthy recently, so it's been good.
Laura Robson's your friend, and she's British, and she won Wimbledon at 14 in 2008, and now you win it at 18 at 2012. I think you stayed at her place during Wimbledon this year. How have you guys managed to stay friends for so long?
Yeah, I did stay with her this week, and it was really fun because she lives really close to Wimbledon. But yeah, we've been friends since we were 10 years old. We met at a tournament in France, and since then, thanks to Facebook and texting, we've, you know, stayed in communication, and we always see each other at tournaments during the year. And this week was really cool because after I won, we go back to the house, and I had my trophy, and then so she, you know, dug up her trophy from 4 years ago, and we took pictures together with both of our trophies, and it was pretty cool.
Have you ever played doubles or anything with her? I think you played her once in singles, didn't you?
Yeah, I played her a few times in singles. I played her once this year in singles in Osprey at the 50,000, and I won there. But the last time I played her before that was, I think we were 12 at the Eddie Herr, and I lost that match. And in doubles, the last time we played, we were 12, I think, at Prince Cup, and we won that tournament, so we did well.
Right. I think you trained with Françoise Abanda at the National Training Center in Montreal. She's 15 and got to the semifinals. She lost to Svitolina, who you beat in the final pretty easily. Françoise is obviously a talented, promising young player. What impresses you most about her?
Yeah, I think she's a really good player. I think she's part of the future of Canadian tennis. She's really, you know, tall, and I think that helps her a lot on the court. And she's very consistent. I think that's what she tries to do, really tries to wear down the opponents, and that's definitely a really good quality to have.
How much fun was it playing on court number one in the court number one stadium for the final match? It was a very good crowd there on the Saturday, and did you have any problems adjusting to the dimensions of the court?
Oh my God, it was so cool. It was the biggest crowd I played in front of, so I mean, I was surprised when I walked out there. I was surprised how full it was and how loud, you know, the people were. When everyone was clapping, it got pretty loud, so it was so cool, and we had the challenge system and everything, and I was just having so much fun out there, but I was able to stay calm and stay focused for my match, because that's the most important thing, of course, but you know, the court was unbelievable, so much better than the other courts. Well, not so much better, but it was better, and I had a good time.
And you talked about what a thrill it was to get your first challenge right, your Hawkeye challenge.
Yeah, I did. Well, I had this challenge system before at the Rogers Cup last year, but I did a pretty bad challenge there, so I was determined to, you know, make it up, you know, do a good one this time, and I was so happy. It was actually on an important point as well, a second serve that they called out, and it ended up being on the line, so I was really proud of myself for that.
How sure were you when you made the challenge?
Not sure, but I had a little feeling that, you know, maybe I could be right, and I asked the umpire, and he didn't immediately say, yeah, it was out. He looked really unsure himself, so I was like, you know what, I'm going to just go for this, and so happy.
You won the doubles with Taylor Townsend of the United States, and you're a very good team. You didn't win the French Open this year as well. I would have thought maybe you would have had a shot both to win the French Open and Wimbledon.
Yeah, we got to the semis of French. I mean, we were hoping to win both, of course, but we played three tournaments together and we only lost one match, so it wasn't bad. But, yeah, the French, I think our games are better on the grass, and we had to play a tough team at the French, but I'm really proud of how we played Roehampton and Wimbledon. We won both of those.
You're pretty soon, you're already playing some WTA tournaments. You already have a ranking of 306 in the WTA rankings. What do you think you're going to have to work on? What are you going to have to get better at to have some success when you play one among the professionals?
I think it's just about continuing to improve my game, and then the results will come. I still want to keep my game, which is playing aggressive, but also be consistent at it and try to move forward when I can, doing those things. I think the most important thing, though, is being mentally strong. I think in the pros, you know, every single match is tough. All the girls are really mentally tough, so it's about who's the toughest out there who will win.
What exactly are your plans for the rest of the summer?
I'm going to play, my next one is Granby next week, and I'm playing basically, you know, the hardcore events in North America. Granby, Lexington, 50,000, Washington, D.C., or Vancouver, Rogers Cup, and then Junior U.S. Open.
Do you hope to get a wild card into the main draw of the Rogers Cup?
Yeah, I hope, of course. I hope I can get one into the main draw. I got one in the main draw last year, but we'll see. Heidi Eltebach has done well recently, so I think she'll definitely get one, and so it's always tough competition among the Canadian girls, but we'll see.
You have a twin sister named Beatrice, and why didn't she become a professional tennis player, or a tennis player who's as good as you are?
Well, we both started out the same when we were five, but I think one or two years later she quit. She didn't like it. I loved it, and she just didn't, you know? So, I mean, she's a normal kid, normal teenager now, and she thinks what I do is really cool, and she supports me all the way, but I don't think it's, you know, I don't think she would... I don't think it's for her as it is for me.
Right. I was looking on the WTA website, and I was looking for Philip Peliwo as well. And when you get to you, they just have a shape of a head and no face there or anything like that. Are you disappointed not to see a picture there?
Where is this, on the WTA website?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. Yeah, geez, I should get a picture up there.
Well, I've made some contacts. We're working on that. So it just seems a shame that you can be a Wimbledon junior girls champion and not have your picture on the on the website of the WTA.
I'll talk to my agent about that and get a picture there.
Well, listen, thanks a lot for talking to us today, Eugenie, and good luck the rest of the summer.
Thank you so much.
Eugenie, don't worry. Tom Tebbit has looked after that. The photos are on the ATP. Anything else you can do for tennis people? Humanity in general, Tom, do you think?
No, Raj, we're working in an order of Canada for you.
Yes, I knew it. It had to come at some time. Well, I know one thing you can do. Answer some emails after our next update, because we have a lot that have come in at roger@sportsnet590.ca. roger@sportsnet590.ca. I have a question for Tom. Be quick, because we got a lot in there, but we'll try to get yours in as well. Any tennis-related question, obviously, Tom will be happy to answer it. And we have the Mystery Sounder again for some nice tickets there, Mr. Tim.
We have tickets, and we have at the end of all the draws, we'll have a Wilson BLX series racket. Of course, the racket that is used by the Wimbledon champion.
All right, Roger Federer indeed. This segment of Aces, by the way, was brought to you by Corona Extra, the official beer sponsor of the ATP Tour. Corona Extra, ready to serve, ATP World Tour premier partner. Coming up, we've got Tom's mailbag, our mystery sounder, your chance to win Rogers Cup tickets. And your questions are welcome, roger@sportsnet590.ca or on Twitter @TheRaj590. You're listening to Aces with Tom Tebbit and Roger Lejoie. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Viewing every game like Hawkeye Tennis Technology.
This is Daniel Nestor, and you're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And thanks to Daniel, another friend of the show, Roger Lejoie, Tom Tebbit. It's Aces, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We are here for the next four Thursdays after this one, so that's five Thursdays in a row. Our schedule is on selected Thursday nights throughout the tennis season, but we've got a nice run of programs here, and thank you so much for your feedback throughout the course of our programs. It's our double segment, and the first part of this segment is brought to you by National Bank. At National Bank, we know that you can't win without strong service, That's why we're proud to sponsor the 2012 Rogers Cup. Visit winningexchanges.ca for details. And it's time to check Tom's mailbag once again. And folks, just a few minutes, we'll have tonight's mystery sounder, your chance to win. When prompted, email or send a tweet, because we get the questions first, and you could win that fabulous prize of the Monday night Rogers Cup. And it's a great night to be there, Tom.
Yeah, it is. It's the kickoff night, and they're going to try to do something special to make it fun for everybody. So I think everybody will enjoy having a chance to go that night.
Always do. It'll be a lot of fun indeed. Okay, man, the questions are pouring in. So let's go to the bottom and work our way up and see how many of these we can get in before we go to our mystery sounder. Charlotte's a regular listener of the program. And Charlotte, thank you for your question. And it is for Tom. How do the opening and closing of the roof at Center Court in Wimbledon affect the playing conditions? I noticed that with Federer in the semis and finals, he was better able to penetrate the defenses of Novak and Andy with the roof closed. Also seemed to hit his spots better with the serve and the roof closed. Charlotte, thanks very much. Playing conditions inside probably favor the more precise player. Is that fair enough to say?
Absolutely, Roger. It's very much like the, you know, whether you play a hardcore tournament like the Rogers Cup outdoors or you play an indoor tournament like they have in the fall in Paris-Bercy, the indoor tournament in Paris. So you don't have the wind, you don't have the sun, so there's less margin for error. And I mean, there's more margin for error, and you can control everything. So a guy like Federer, who's got such fine timing and everything, he's advantaged when it happens like that. There was some talk too about the court being maybe a little more humid, so the ball can hit and skid, or it can slow the ball down because it's heavy. All kinds of different considerations, but basically, you just don't want to have any distractions. You don't want to have anything like the wind or the sun, and that's why it helped Federer probably in the third and fourth sets against Murray.
Well said, sir. Okay, thanks. Well said, sir, and thank you, Charlotte, for the question. Vinny says, couple of quick questions for Tom. Will Grigor Dimitrov ever realize his full potential? And if so, what's his ceiling? I think he's got top five talent, says Vinny. And the second one, Tamira Pasek, her match against Wozniacki at Wimbledon was such an enjoyable match to watch. What about those two fine young players there?
Well, Dimitrov is about 6 months younger than Raonic, and he still hasn't really come through. He's had a couple of good results lately, but he's also had some injury problems. But he's a beautiful player, but has a one-handed backhand. They talk about him being baby Federer and everything. But you just sort of wonder what's in the bottom, in the pit of his stomach, if he really has it. As for Pasek, she grew up in Canada a little bit, in Toronto and in Calgary. Her father was a pastry chef at Mövenpick in Toronto at one point. I love watching her. She's a real free swinger, hits the ball really well, and she's got just this infectious look in her, this sort of sparkle to her. So she's been playing better and better, but she's had some pretty inconsistent results at times, but maybe things have clicked now. It should be fun to follow her for the next little while.
Okay. I love Mövenpick, by the way. Mac emails in, Roger and Tom, enjoying the program as always. Thank you, Mac. Do you have any idea, or Peronka, give me the name here.
Svetlana Peronkova.
Thank you. You say that so well. Her results seem to spike at Wimbledon a lot, but rarely do we see her make any noise at any of the other majors. What is it about her game that makes her sort of a grass court specialist?
Well, she's beaten Venus Williams there twice, and I think one time maybe Venus was defending champion. Peronkova's a Bulgarian. There were the Mileva sisters from there, so she comes from a bit of a tennis tradition, but she's kind of kooky. She moves very well, so I think that helps. Also, she sort of slops the ball around. She actually chops her forehand, which almost nobody does, but she just has a really good feel for playing on grass. And somehow when she gets on clay or hard courts, she gets exposed. Maybe the ball comes up higher because she likes playing it low. So really, she is a specialist. And actually, look for her to maybe do something at the Olympics because she gets a second chance on grass again.
Okay, it'll be interesting. We'll talk more about the Olympics. We've got an Olympic question coming up as well. Donald says, the old saying in team sports is defense wins championships. I'm wondering if Tom thinks the same is true for tennis. I tend to think it's the opposite. It seems as though you get to a certain point with defense, but you need offense to put you over the top in tennis. Donald, thanks. I don't know if we can divide offense, defense that categorically, Tom, but there isn't any question a tentative game is rarely going to get you anywhere.
No, you're right. I think probably the number one exponent of the defensive game of the top players would be Nadal, but you sure as heck know that he can also whack the ball and be very offensive. But I think Djokovic is somewhere in between, and Federer definitely on the offensive side. But the thing you forget about Federer as well is how well he moves, and in playing defensively, he gets to a lot of balls and quickly turns it into offense. So there is a crossover between offense and defense. Maybe the guys who do the best do that, you know, do that the best.
We got a question on Twitter as well, the Raj590. You can either tweet at the Raj590 or email Roger at sportsnet590.ca. We got a lot of questions tonight, so we appreciate them, folks. Good to get your feedback. Phil, nice to hear from you, Phil. Hope you're doing well. Says Milos's inability to consistently win the small tournaments, will it hurt his next big thing, reputation? It's certainly, I don't want to say disturbing, but it's certainly frustrating to see that he has not been able to punch through in other events.
Well, today was probably the worst day ever, I think. He lost 6-3, 6-3 to Benjamin Becker, who's ranked 112 in the world as a qualifier. He's a good player, but Milos just played poorly. He also played poorly in his first round against Matthew Ebden from Australia. So we'd like to see him do better in some of the smaller events, but also, and we'd like to assume do better in the big events because that's where there's more ranking points. So I think you just got to be patient. And the grass is not very good in Newport. It's actually, it's terrible. So I think he just somehow fought it the whole time and just never got at ease. So when he gets back to London for the Olympics, the grass will be a lot better. And so maybe that'll put him in a better frame of mind.
Nayla emails in and says, I heard that Wimbledon is thinking about pushing the start date back a week, providing the players with an extra week between the French Open and Wimbledon. Do you think this will happen? And if so, how soon can we expect it? And is there any chance the tour would add a Masters 1000 event on grass if this occurs?
Well, Roger, that is my pet peeve in tennis. I just think it's almost inhumane to have 2 weeks between the French and Wimbledon, because the week after the French, the champion of the French should just be able to
chill out.
Chill out, whatever. Then the next week, you should maybe play a tournament tune up. And then the third week, you just sort of tune your game, sort of relax like you do before all the Grand Slams. So I think it's a great idea. I think there is a real possibility. A new chairman of the All England Club is very big on this idea. So I think it could happen no sooner for sure than 2014, 2015. The chance of Masters Series, I think that's unlikely if you think about it, because there's a big tournament for the men in Holland and a big tournament at Queen's Club in London. So which one gets to be a Masters 1000? Masters 1000 has to have all the top players.
Yeah, you're obligated to
play.
So
you've got these two other tournaments existing now, so I don't see it happening.
Yeah, okay. Interesting question, Nayla. Thank you. Brian in Toronto's a regular listener. And Brian, thanks very much. He says he doesn't have the stats to support this claim, but just based on the good old eyeball test, it seemed there were more net approaches at Wimbledon this year. Was the grass playing differently, or were the players just trying to play more economical points given the compact schedule with the Olympic year? It's interesting. Did you notice that?
Well, maybe a little bit, but I'll tell you one thing. You sit in center court and you look where the grass is worn out, and it's all along the baseline. And in the old days, 20 years ago, when everybody was going to the net serving volleying, there was sort of this mushroom pattern where the players would go up towards the net and then fan out to the right or the left, making it like a mushroom. There's nothing in the surface boxes up there near the net. There's nothing. It's perfectly green there now. It's all at the baseline. So, I think just sometimes it's a good strategy to do. But if you look like the worn patches on the court, it's all by the baseline.
Yeah, it gives it
that's
away.
Where they are.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when you look at it, you can tell just by the grass how the play is going for sure. T-Bert says there was a time when the average height of a player on the men's tour was below 6 feet. Now it seems to be above 6 feet. Does Tom think we'll ever see a 7-footer on the tour? He mentions Dirk Nowitzki plays tennis a lot. But, I mean, we talked about this on the women's side. And, T-Bert, thank you for the email. The size difference in these athletes now is phenomenal.
Yeah, Dirk Nowitzki went by my window.
Right?
He was there cheering for Lisicki and Kerber, the German players. So he was with a couple of people from the ATP. Ivo Karlovic is 6'10". I think that's the tallest they've gone. I always thought that maybe Michael Jordan, you know, if he had turned to tennis, he was such a phenomenal athlete, would he have been great? So I think that it's getting up there, but there are, we see with John Isner, 6'9". I think like Milos Raonic, maybe Del Potro, 6'6". I think that might be it, but who knows in 20 years. But I just think when you get too tall, there's just some problems with movement and things like that.
Okay. Now Lyle's got one for you. Two-part question regarding the Olympics. What system does the Olympics use to seed players for the tournament? And secondly, he wants to put you on the hot seat. Who's taking the gold in the men's and women's tournament at London in 2012?
Well, as far as I know, the seeding would be just like any other tournament. One of the interesting things is the most you can have from one country in the two draws, men's and women's, is four. And actually what they're doing is you can't have more than one in each quarter. So they don't want players from, you know, the same country.
Playing each other, sure.
So
yeah,
they're actually putting players, like if a country has four, they're doing that. So, I think that's the way it goes. The second part of the question was?
Second part of the question was... who you think is going to win the men's and women's tournament?
Well, I called Djokovic and Kleisters for the Wimbledon.
Yeah, nice call.
The one thing I did think before that started, I thought you might have different people doing well at Wimbledon and in the Olympics. So maybe we'll see a different cast of characters.
So stick with them. So stick with the same ones then.
No, don't stick with them. There's going to be a different. Oh, I. So
yeah, no, because you were so wrong. Exactly. Boy, I'm glad you caught on that. Boy, I'm getting tired of these kind of emails, lad, that Rick comes in. Rick says, first of all, we should rename the mailbag segment Questions for Professor Tebbit. He is a wealth of knowledge. Is a friend of yours? Is Rick Tebbit? No, it's not the same last name. Rick, you're right, he is. So here's a question. Wimbledon uses their own seeding system rather than going by the world rankings. They weight the grass court results more than seeding the players. Why don't the other majors adapt this type of system instead of just going consistently by the world rankings? Is Wimbledon the only one that's ever going to do this?
Yeah, it's only for the men, too. I think it's very simple. The grass court is basically just 4 weeks a year. There's another week, like this week in Newport. Basically, it's such an exceptional surface that they want to try to reflect the players' abilities on the grass. And there's a lot of clay court tournaments, a lot of hard court tournaments, indoor tournaments. So there's enough of those that I think it balances out. But for grass, you just don't want to have it really skewed too much by the rankings. You want to try as best you can to have it related to how well the players can play on grass.
Rick, thanks for a good question and your kind comments. You're a good man. Tom certainly doesn't know his stuff for sure. Paula says, my question for Tom is, in most sports, playing at home is an advantage, where it seems at tennis, some players find it more difficult to play at home. Why is this? I don't know what the stats are, but sometimes it is rough to be on your home turf, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, I think John Wertheim, the guy at Sports Illustrated, wrote a book about this. Sort of put down the notion that you do better when you're playing at home. I think in tennis it goes sort of both ways. Murray, actually, I think, if you think of him in Wimbledon, really sort of feeds off the crowd and does pretty well. And the fact that he lost to Federer, I think bottom line is Federer is a better player, but I thought Murray, you know, performed very well. Some of the French players, you have people like Amélie Mauresmo. She was just petrified playing at home and did a lot better at Wimbledon. So I think it just depends, but a lot of the players feed off it when they're playing in their home tournament. It'll actually be fun this summer when Milos Raonic plays here in Toronto.
Yeah, see if it helps him. Let's hope so. Time for one more, and then we got to get to our sounder. Niraj says, good evening, guys. What do you guys think of the most? What do you guys think is the most important shot in tennis? For a long time, it was a serve, but is it starting to become the return of serve? There seems to be more great servers than there are great returners. That's an interesting point, because I tell you what, as I don't watch tennis nearly as closely as you do, Tom, but I do find the fact now breaking the serve is of such paramount importance. That first return shot is pretty important.
Yeah, it's really hard to say. I mean, the basis of today's tennis, I think, is one of the reasons that Murray has a problem is his forehand isn't quite as devastating as Federer, Djokovic, Nadal, Tsonga, Berdych, whatever. And so the 1-2 punch in tennis these days is a big serve. The return coming back isn't that good, and bam, the forehand's gone. So those shots are obviously important. But, you know, I think we're seeing with Milos, that's one of the big things he's got to improve on is returning serve. Everybody, there's a good consensus about that. So, but if, you know, you can return serve like $1 million, but if you can't serve yourself and you keep getting your own serve broken. So I think the serve's still in the forehand. If you got that 1-2 punch, that's the main thing players have today in the modern game.
Great questions, everybody. Thanks so much. We'll do it again the next 4 weeks with Tom here on Thursday nights on Aces. All right, time for our mystery sounder. It's brought to you tonight by the merchantoftennis.com, celebrating 20 years. Merchantoftennis.com, game, set, and shop. Have we got an easy one, a hard one this time?
Anyway, in the middle.
Yeah. Here's the mystery sounder. Listen in.
As I was walking off the practice court, someone from the Evening Standard said to me that they were coming. And yeah, it's nice. I think it's great for tennis. Anytime you can get royalty to come along, it doesn't happen that often, so enjoy.
All right, there you have it. If you know that voice, and you do, email roger at sportsnet590.ca. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Want the sounder ones just to the email, please, because we get so many, and we'll pick among them. And congratulations to Sonic Wire. There's a handle for you. Sonic Wire is the winner of our tickets. What does he win?
He wins 2 tickets August the 6th, the Monday night at the Rogers Cup, and he goes into the draw for a Wilson DLX Series racket.
All right, fantastic. And if you know the answer, and the answers are already coming in at roger at sportsnet590.ca, all correct answers, we put, Tom just points the finger at the magic one, you could win those tickets for the Monday night at the Rogers Cup.
Roger, people who wear kilts are not eligible for this one. No kilts.
No kilts. Well, how are we supposed to know that?
Well, we can do a little spying of our own.
Tom, we got about a minute. What a week for Canadian tennis. I think fans were just delighted by them. Seriously, though, the correlation between winning junior and winning ultimately a major tournament is what?
Well, it's always a little shaky. I mean, you have some who go on and some who don't. So there's no 100% correlation. But, I mean, all you can do is play against the best players in the world, your peers. And what Bouchard and what Pellegrino did is just fantastic. I mean, really, to do it at Wimbledon, the cathedral of tennis, the ultimate place to play, and to do it under the pressure of trying to perform there, you can't ask for more. So I think, you know, Philip has the intensity. I really think that's something that's going to help him. And Eugenie basically has the basics in terms of size and being a good competitor. She's 5'10", like I mentioned earlier. So, I think she has those things. That's what you need a lot in women's tennis these days. And Philip, not a Milos Raonic at 6'5", but he's never going to give away a point.
That's for sure. Well, folks, thanks very much again. Philip Pelliwo and Eugenie Bouchard joining Tom today. Thanks to our technical director, Derek Brandeo, and our producer, Corey D'Souza. And again, roger at sportsnet590.ca. You just heard the sounder. You've got all kinds of time to put your email in with the correct answer. Tom will pick the winner, and we'll be here the next 4 Thursdays. And next week, we'll announce another lucky prize winner. Tom, great to have you back. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Roger.
That's Tom Tebbit. I'm Roger Lajoie. We'll talk to you next Thursday night right here on Canada's Tennis Show. That's Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.